Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Aleph, and we're continuing from the drasha, the simple drasha that Rabbi Yonatan brought, telling Ben Azai what it was that Rabbi Yishmael was derech, and Rabbi Yishmael, a very straightforward drasha. Since it says beferish in the pasuk that the nevela of both a behema and a behema shehi lechem la'ochla, which meant either a non-kosher or a kosher behema, would be a nevela, would be metame and adam. So therefore, that would by definition mean that a chaya is in exactly the same situation. Why? Because we know from elsewhere. Now, we didn't explain yesterday how we know from elsewhere, but we know from elsewhere that wherever the Torah mentions chaya, it incorporates behema by definition, and wherever it mentions behema, it incorporates chaya by definition, and that was something that we took for granted yesterday. Now, today we'd like to see where exactly do we learn that from, that chaya is bechal behema, and behema is bechal chaya. So today the Gemara asks, Chaya bechlal behema minolan. Where exactly did it say in the Torah that where we talk about the word behema, we automatically include chaya? Well, it's rather obvious, isn't it? When the Torah starts describing to us the names of all of the kosher animals, so the simoni, more names of animals and birds, so it says first, Zot ha behema asher tochelu. The following behemot you can eat. Sure, sex avim, and so on. And then it goes on to talk about behemot that you've never heard of. Ayol, tzvi, yachmur. I mean, these are not behemot. These are like deers and antelopes and so on. I mean, those are not behemot. They're not domesticated animals. So how did you say zot ha-behema she-tochelu and then go blithely along and start talking about chayot? So obviously, we have no choice but to conclude that the word chayot is actually a word that is included in behema, because it just takes it for granted. Zot behema, which means that we would think, if we only saw this, that the broader categorization was behema. But that would not be true, because, continues, behema bichlal chayot. It's also true the other way around, that these are essentially synonymous unless they are being juxtaposed. So a behema is included in a chaya also. Where do we see that? Because we also have the same interaction, except in the inverse, when we're talking about the Parsha Shmini. So there it says, Zot ha-chaya asher tochlu mikol ha-behema. What? These are the chayos that you can eat out of all of the behemot, koma freset parasa, and so on. So here it claimed to be describing chayot, and then all of a sudden it starts describing the behemot. I'd explain that. Must be hoketzat. It's obvious that the pasuk is considering these to be incorporative, which means that they must be synonymous if each one incorporates the other one. So hoketzat, behema bechlal chaya. So that is the essential point. And then each one of these things is meant to convey a chiddush. And Rabbi Yishmael was telling us chiddush, that a chaya is bichlal, because he went on to say, chaya Torah is bichlal beimah Torah, and beimah Torah is bichlal chaya Torah, and chaya tmeyah is bichlal beimah tmeyah. But what are each of those four descriptions coming to tell me? I mean, obviously, it's not just babbling. Each one of them was meant to make a very specific point. I'd like to go through those four points and try to figure out vis-a-vis which halacha this is a chiddush. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. What he said, the Chaya Torah is included within Behema Torah. What was that referring to? Well, that was referring to the din of the simonim, of what are the simonim that allow you to eat and to determine that a chaya is kosher. So since the Torah described the simanim of the behema, it means that those simanim of mafreset parsa, shosah, chesa, vigira, igor, all of that applies equally to a chaya as it does to a behema, even though the Torah never said specifically that we have these simanim when it comes to a chaya. Okay, fair enough. Now, that does not mean as we're going to see, it does not mean that this is the only place that Rabbi Yishmael was telling us this Chiddush, because it isn't really much of a Chiddush in that place, because that is the mucker for the interrelationship of Eman Chaya, right? So it's a pretty poor example. But the truth is, we're going to see there's a lot of different things, one of which we just learned yesterday. This was the mucker that Rabbi Yonatan explained to Ben Azai, was how it was that Rabbi Yishmael taught him that the nevela of a chaya tahora is metame b'nevela. So, I mean, we didn't even mention that, even though that was the primary thing we had brought it up for in the first place, right? So obviously, this is not an inclusive list. It's the obvious list. So when Rabbi Yishmael said that first of the 4 points, namely that the chaya tahora is bechlal b'ema tahora, that means that when we say it's for simonim, it's for, among other things, such as the din of tumas nevelas that we had yesterday. It's for simonim. We're going to see there's other things as well. Each of these rules are obviously broad categories. Now, the second point that Rabbi Yishmael made specifically was, a chaya tamea is bichlal a behema tamea. What was that? Where do we need to know that it didn't say beferish, that the chaya tamea din we would only know because of the halacha behema tamea? That was for harba'a, for cross-mating species, where over there the Torah specified in the din, et chukotai tishmoru behem techalot tarbi akilai. Doesn't say anything about chaya over there. It says behem techalot tarbi akilai. Well, so I need to know that the same thing is true about a chaya. So you cannot mate one species of chaya with another species of chaya any more than you would be allowed to crossbreed different types of behemoths. Okay, next point that he raises. Behema tmea, bechlal chaya tmea. What's the chiddush about that? Well, this we mentioned yesterday, but we didn't know what it was about. Remember, we said it's coming to teach me the din of Rebbe. And I told you, okay, Rebbe, we're going to learn tomorrow. So here we've arrived at Rebbe. What did Rebbe say to the Tanya? Rebbe Omer, that if you have the din of, which we spoke about yesterday, great detail, the pasuk that the Torah mentions, the halacha of a carbon oila v'yare. So it says in that pasuk, all kinds of examples. O nefesh asher tiga b'chol davar tamei, o benivlat chayat mea, o benivlat beimat mea, v'hu tamei v'ashem. Now, it doesn't say what he did wrong. It says he became tamei, and he was a bad boy, and became guilty. Guilty of what? So Rebbe says, aha, I'll tell you. Ekra ani chaya. Look, if the Torah would only have written in that pasuk, Nefesh ki tiga, instead of saying this whole jazz of beimat meya b'shekets tamei, and b'chol devar tamei, nivlat chayat meya, nivlat beimat meya, but what do we need this whole long list for? Just say the word chayat meya. We know that that includes behema, because he's taking for granted Rabbi Shmuel's drasha. So why did the Torah have to mention both a behema and a chaya in the same pasuk? Can you tell me that? I'll tell you. Behema lama nemra. You know why the Torah went out of its way to mention behema? Because it never defined what he did wrong. This behema is extra in order to create a gzeirah shavah. That's why. What's the gzeirah shavah? Well, here it says by the carbon oil of a yared, it mentions a behema tamea for no reason, just to be open to a gzeirah shavah. Now, it also says in the parsha of achilas kotche betumas haguf, it says exactly the same mention, Nemar Lahalan, Behema Tameya, where over there it says, V'nefesh ki tiga b'chol tamei, O b'behema tameya. It uses the same lashon over there, O b'behema tameya. So just like that pasuk was a reference to Achilas Kachim B'tumas Haguf, it means that the Ashem over here is Ashem in terms of the dinim of Kachim. Malahalan tumas kedesh, avkan tumas kedesh, and what it's referring to with the korban oil of yored is the kapora for the chi of koras of knisa lamigdash betuma or achilas kotche betuma saguf. So that means that Rebbe is taking for granted what we learned of Rebbe Yishmael. because the entire sense of the extra word that allows the Gzeira Shava, Behema, was based on Rabbi Yishmael, that Behema was anyway included in Chaya. So why does it say Behema? That's why Rabbi Yishmael spoke out. So Rabbi Yishmael took all of this into consideration. So when he said, that comes to tell me that the Behema is Bechlal Chaya, he had in mind the implications that that would have about the Pasuk of a Karban Olah V'Yoreh. That's the way to have a Kol HaTorah Kula interrelated at each point. So your simple statement, which only says, look, the obvious, these things are all connected, and therefore A is like B there, and B is like A there, and minus A is like minus B there, and so on. You think that that's just, okay, I don't know, whatever. Each one of those words took into consideration its impact across Kol HaTorah Kula, which automatically included, was this an extra word in that pasuk? It's beautiful. Amazing. The constant fingers on each aspect of Torah, recognizing that if anything changes here, it changes there. It's a complete Torah Shlema. Okay. And the last point that Rabbi Yishmael made was that the Behema Torah is included within Chaya Torah. Why is that important? Where do we ever need to understand something based on the fact that if the Torah mentions Chaya, it includes a Behema? Ah, that's a big one. That has to do with Maaseh Bereishis. Because you will notice that God never created Behemot, right? It only says that the earth brought forth the Chayot. First time that we find Behemot is after Adam Arishon calls the names of the animals. And in calling them by their name, he creates the relationship of Behema, because that was, in one word, the history of millions of years of domestication. That became the Behema of Adam Arishon, right? But the question is, since it didn't mention the word Yitzirah when it spoke in the Torah of Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min Adama kol chayat asadeh ved kol of Hashemayim, and he presents them to Adam. Doesn't say anything about Yetzirah. So how do we explain that? Must be that Behema is included in the din of Yetzirah. Who cares? I mean, yeah, it's nice to know, but does it make enough
Yetzirah
to be
and Chaya, Rabbi Meir.
What did I say?
He's included in the Yetzirah of Chaya.
Yeah, whatever I said, just forget okay. It. There's some nut talks all the time here. Anyway, so yes. So that Yetzirah. So what is the importance of that Yetzirah? Ah, that is very important. It has to do with the halacha, which is a Mishnah in the Seches Nida, about what type of human mutations in birth are going to cause tumas leida. That's the Shaila. So it says in the Mishnah over there in Nida that a woman who has an abortion in which the fetus is completely malformed, does not seem to be human. It looks like some kind of chaya, behema, or some kind of bird. And it doesn't matter whether that's a kosher chaya, a non-kosher chaya. The sex determines how long she has to be yoshevet, bedam tame or bedam tohar. That's all. So remember, a birth of a male, and here we're saying whether it's a mutation or not, a birth of a male is a 7-day tuma followed by a 33 days dam tohar, and the birth of females is 14 days of tuma followed by double that amount of the zohar, the 66 days of Tyra, in which is Yosheva's Dam Tayar. And it doesn't matter whether it's a mutated fetus or if it's a typical human fetus. Im Zachar Teshev Le Zachar, Im Nekeva Teshev Le Nekeva. How about if you cannot figure out the sex of this fetus? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's like some weird thing. I don't even know how to tell its sex. If it can't figure it out, then Teshev Le Zachar Vula Nekeva. So then she has to keep both parts l'chumra. She'll be tamea for 14 days on the tzad that maybe this is a female, and she'll only be tahora until the end of the instead of 80 days, the end of 40 days. And so she's left with the difference of the remaining 33 days, which now becomes minus another 7, right? Because we've got 14 and only dam tahor up till 40. So that means she's got the worst of both worlds. The worst of the tuma of the nekeva and the lesser amount of dam tohar of the zohar. So says Rabbi Meir. But the chachomim say, no, if it doesn't look human, then it's vitzenu mitzurat adam, that is not called a child to be metame. So kol she'eno mitzurat adam, eno vlad. Now it says over there, Rabbi Meir's shita, that any species is matame, if it's an inside of a mutated, a mother's mutated fetus, is because since it says by Adam, vayitzer Hashem Elokim et ha-Adam, any type of animal, also it says vayitzeron. Ah, but it doesn't, does it? It never said vayitzeron behema. So, when Rabbi Yishmael said those words, that the behema is bichlal v'chaya, what was he referring to? Obviously, this is what he had in mind, was this whole question of machlokas Rabbi Meir and the chachamim, and what's the din of the mutation? I mean, that's like obviously the first thing that comes to the mind of anybody in kindergarten, especially Rabbi Yishmael. So therefore, he was referring specifically to this itself. So even though the pasuk only mentioned Yetzira b'nogea the Chaya, it included the Mishnah in Nida, which mentioned Behema, Tzura of a Behema Chaya va'of. That's what it was about. Beautiful. Okay, so now we get back to our machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Tanakama. So the Tanakama holds there's no difference between a Behema Tamea and a Behema Tahira. Why? Because he had the Hekesh, and that Hekesh compared the Tamea to the Tahira, and so would have the same din. The only reason that Rabbi Yossi Aglili was able to go against that Hekesh, that even though it said be nivlat chaya Tamea o be nivlat Behema Tamea, that he understood that it's the nafkamina of the dead vlad. So he was learning that there is an aspect of tuma, specifically of a tamea type of animal, that does not appear in the Torah kind of animal. And what was that? That was the incredible fact that in the case, the single case of where the animal is dead inside of its mother's womb, it's telling me that there's a difference and there's tumas nevela on a min tamea, as we learned before. So now it's interesting because we never explained what it is that the Rabbanan say. What did they do with that pasuk? Why does it have to say this idea of nivlat chaya tmeya, oh nivlat chaya beima tmeya? Why are we, according to them, why do I need that? And the answer is very clear. That is because of Rebbe. Since we needed to have that drosha of Rebbe, and Rebbe says, why did it mention over here both the Chaya? It could have simply said Chaya, not said anything about the Behema. It all must be that it's here in order to tell me what the Va'ashem is, that the Va'ashem is Achilas Kedesh Betumas Aguf or Knis HaLamikdash. I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't repeated the extra word. And that's how they understand that pasuk, not like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And because of that, there's no problem, because I needed to explain what the Korban Oil of Yered is coming on. Excellent. So now this brings us to an important moment where we are zocha to duck, introducing the Mishnah.
Zokta helika Mishnah.
Oh, if Barnea was after you, Doc, you'd have a drink next to you. See, you're lucky. Even though you're almost next to him, at least on my screen, you made it because of Akiva. Mm-hmm. All right. So continues the Mishnah. Now you can mute. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'isha. Now we've talked about the dinim of nevelas. What would be the halacha once we brought up the din of tuma in the womb? What would be the halacha of human tuma in the womb? So note that we've made this gradual transition. First, we were talking about stam, the din of the issue of treifas, and whether the shechita of the mother would help. Then we went on to talk about whether the very presence of the live mother would help, vis-a-vis tumas nevelas, and the difference between behema tmiya and between the behema tahira. And then we want to talk about the question, not simply of tumas nevelas, what about tumas mace? What about a dead human fetus? And note how the transition was so smooth, because we went to discuss for a moment the din of Yetzira, which had to do with human fetuses that were malformed and that were complete mutations. Now moving back to standard case of a fetus that dies in the human mother's womb. Is that fetus a dead human? And it therefore will create tumas mace wherever it goes. So the halacha is that ha'isha shemet v'lada betoch me'eha, a woman who is carrying around a dead fetus. And now the midwife puts her hand into that woman's womb and touches the dead fetus. The din is that the midwife is tumea tuma shiva. The midwife who touched that fetus is tomei as a normal tumas meis, 7 days, requires hazoya, shlishi v'shvii, and mikveh, and so on and so forth. But the woman herself, who's carrying this dead fetus, is not tmeya, and the isha is tahora until such time as the fetus is expelled. Okay, so now what is this halacha based on? Omar Rabbah. Kishem shetum'a belu'a, eina mitam'a, kach tahora belu'a, eina mitam'a. We start with a halacha that does not, on the surface, directly relate to the question of a dead fetus. Because what we're talking about over here is kalim. We're talking about things that are tame, that have been mekabel tuma from something else. Can they give off their tuma, or can they be mekabel that tuma? Now, the Gemara is going to extend this into something which is itself tame, and that is to say the case of the fetus, later. But first, we start off with this general rule. The same way that a kli that is inside something and it's balua, so it's been swallowed. So let's say somebody swallows a tamei ring, right? And this ring, maybe it's made out of metal, and it was tamei betumas meis, because it would be cherev areyu kichalal, and it's an avatuma, and so on. But the same way that that tuma, once it's swallowed, we're going to ask how we know that, but once it's swallowed, it does not emanate tuma. The same thing is true if something which is tahar is swallowed, and it's exposed to tuma, it will not be mekabel tuma. So, in other words, let's imagine a case where somebody swallows a ring that is tahor, walks into an ohel hames, becomes tamei mes, and now that ring is not any longer in the ohel hames. He walks out of the ohel hames, and then vomits or excretes that ring. That ring is not tamei. Why? Because it was exposed to the mace only while it was swallowed inside of that person. So this means, in both directions, the tumor can't get out. This is what we think it means. We're going to find out it means something much more than that. It's not just that it can't get out. It's that it's not tummy. And this is going to make a tremendous difference. And that's why we're bringing this all up in the context of our Mishnah. Because if we say it's not tummy, then what happens if you have a tamei ring inside of somebody's tummy, and then you, same person, he's really into rings, he swallows a tahor ring. And now the tahor ring touches the tummy ring in his tummy, in his stomach. Now, when he excretes those rings, the tahar ring is still tahar, even though it touched the tummy ring in his tummy. Right? That's tummy, not tummy, tummy. So in his tummy, the tummy ring is not metame, the tahar ring in tummies. So therefore, it means that it really is not metame. It doesn't just mean it isn't going to be able to let the tuma escape from its tummy. Okay, how do we know this? The truth is, I would never have allowed Gavi to get away without his magic pen, but while he drives, I find that those sparks get in the way of his being able to see the road properly, so he can't write in those situations. So, tuma belua minola. How do we know when something is inside of a tummy, it is not metami? Dichtiv. Here's a clear-cut indication. We were talking about a nevela, and the din is if somebody eats a nevela, then he becomes tummy, and even his clothing are tummy, and that reference is, of course, that the tuma of nevelas, if it's bemasa, even his clothing becomes tummy. It doesn't literally mean if you eat a nevela, there's no din of eating a nevela other than of a nevela of tahar. So, it says, he should go to the mikveh, wash his clothing, he's tamei ad ha'erev. Now, what do you mean he's tamei ad ha'erev? He ate a piece of nevela 1 minute before shkia, jumps into the mikveh, comes out of the mikveh just as his watch brings the exact last minute of shkia. Deep, 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 deep. And he's pumped coming out of the mikveh. And it says over there he's tahar because he waited until the evening, right? But wait a second. This guy's walking around with a piece of fresh nevela in his tummy. Why isn't it metame him again? You'll say, well, what do you mean? If you touch things in the Beit HaSitarim, it's not metame. That's true. But if you carry things in the Beit HaSitarim, it is metame. So why doesn't he become tummy again, and he could only go to the mikveh after he digests this nevela? And yet the Torah says even a fresh piece of nevela is not going to be metame him as long as it's in his tummy. How do you explain that? So since it says, V'alchel min yivletayich habez begadav, mi lo askin adachos samach l'shkiyat hachama, aren't we even talking about a case in which he just ate this fresh piece of nevela a minute ago, and he goes to the mikveh, and the Torah says he's tahar? How could he be tahar if he's carrying around the nevela? Clearly, something that is tame is not metame while it's in a tame. That's what you see from here. But wait a minute. That's not the reason why. Maybe the reason why is because it's not a nevela anymore. Because remember what the Torah says to do with a nevela? It says, Lo tochlu kol nevela, la ger asher b'sharecha titnena ve'achala, right? You're supposed to give it to the ger toshav. Now, is the ger toshav going to eat something that is in your tummy? Even if you manage to vomit it out? I should hope not. And therefore, since it's not ro'ui for a ger, it's no longer metame b'nevela. Not because it's balua, but because it's disgusting, and nobody is going to eat it. So that would be the reason. V'dilma shanei atam d'lo chazil a ger. Maybe that's the reason that it's not going to be metame him, not because it's tuma balua. Now, I understand that according to Rabbi Yochanan, he says that actually, the halacha is that a piece of nevela is not going to be metame, not humans, and not eichlin, whether it's tuma chamura or whether it's tuma kala. You'll remember those words. So the tuma chamura would be metame adam, tuma kala is only metame eichlin umashkin. Whether it's tuma chamura or tuma kala, Rabbi Yochanan holds that once it's nifsal miachilas kelev, then, and only then, it's not metame. So then you don't need, he doesn't hold that the shiur of losing the din of the vela is defined by not being ro'i leger. He says it's not ro'i lekelef, because remember, we have the mention to the lakelef tashlichunoto also. Okay, that machlokas is not for us here, but he holds it's the kelef stage that makes it not ro'i, not the ger stage. Okay, so then it makes sense, because even though it's not roi for a human to eat if you ate it, but it would still, if you just vomit it out immediately, you could still feed it to the dogs. But what about according to Bar Pana, who says, when it comes to Tuma Chamura to be Matame Adam, it loses its Tuma, its Nevela, the moment it's not roi Lager. So Tuma Chamura Lager. And only Benogea Tumas Eichlin Umashkin, which is called Tumas Kala, there it's still going to be Metame Tumas Kala, unless it's actually not even Roy Frachila by a Kelev. Okay. Then this understanding that you claim teaches me that Tumas Blua is not Metame is completely not true. The reason the Nevela is not Metame after you swallowed it is because you can't give it to a Ger. Right? So that Ger Toshav is not going to eat something that you ate. And therefore, how can it prove that it's not metame because it's balua? I tell you, it's not metame because it's mishum de lo chazir leger, not because it's balua. Well, now, wait a minute. You're jumping to conclusions. I mean, how many times do you go to these beautiful, fancy hotels where they give you a bed that's absolutely filthy and covered with God knows what kind of germs, and what you're paying through the nose for, and filled with bed bugs, and they put a $500 a night, price tag on it or more, and then you go down into the beautiful hotel restaurant where they're feeding you the snot of all the workers, and even actually pieces that were vomited up, but nobody knows. They put it under the sink and they just put it back into the pot. And there you go with that delicious meal for which you pay another 500 smackaroos. And so, do people.
He's not a fan of staying in hotels.
Yes, exactly. And so, in that case, you know perfectly well that the Ger Toshav is certainly going to eat this if it's in a fancy hotel. And the fact that it was vomited out isn't Nogea. It's only if he knows, but how will he ever know, right? So, Nehido Chazer Befanav, it may not be Roy Lachila Sager Toshav in front of him, but if it's in the hotel kitchen, then it's perfectly delicious. So, Shalom Befanav, Michza Chazia, it is certainly, and nonetheless, the Torah says, it must be kosher, must be Tohar if it allows you to go to the mikveh. It must be because it is Tuma Belua. So even if you hold that the Shir is Chazir Lager, it would still be a Chiddush to teach me that Tuma Belua is not Metami, right? Perfect. Okay. Most of you guys don't know that I've owned two hotels in my life. So I know. Okay. So Ashkechan, Tuma Belua. Okay. So now we see the first part of Rabba, that if something is tame and it's swallowed, it's not going to be metame. But how do we know what he said about Tyra Balua? So we said that if there's a ring in a tummy and you go into a bite that's tame, the ring in the tummy remains tahar and not tame. So how do we know that? Tahara Balua, minola. Ah, that's a kavachomer. Because, look, if a kli cheres, which is mukaf tzamid patil, so remember the halacha, a kli cheres has a ring inside of it, and it's covered with a tight-fitting cover, a tzamid patil, then the din is that whatever is inside, protected in this kli cheres, that's inside of the oil hames, is not going to be makabel tuma. Now, let's imagine the opposite case. Let's imagine that you have a kezayit min hamet inside of a kli cheres with a tzamid patil. Does it prevent the tuma from getting out of the kli cheres? Absolutely not. Unless it's an ohel on its own, but if it doesn't have a full tefach on above it to make itself an ohel and it's not a tefach the seismic oil, what's the din? It's going to break right out. It's not going to be matzil on tumas meis inside of the klicheres and prevent it from being metame, because the omar mar, what is the rule? Tuma ritzutza bokat viola adrakia. Remember our fundamental rule in ohalot. The moment that tuma is compressed into a space in which it has less room for expansion than one tefach, it breaks out of whatever field is containing it, and now it busts out into the house. And that would mean that the entire house would be tame. Akiva, are you concentrating? You're thinking about something else, my friend. Don't think I don't know. Okay, so then that means that the Kal Vachomer goes, if the Kli is not going to be matzil the house from the Tumas Meis in it, it's still going to be matzil the ring from the Tumas Meis in the house. So then if that's the case, a human who is matzil on the tameh that is within him, we showed that from the pasuk of the Nevela that that tumah is not going to come out when it's in his tummy. That means that tummies are better than a kli cheres with a tzomit pasuk, right? And they kol shekein are going to be matzil the ring in the inside of the tummy if a kli cheres works better on rings that are inside than maces that are inside from breaking out. So if the adam works in the other direction, kol shekein the tyra belua will be protected from tuma. No, wait a minute. That is not a fair comparison. Excuse me. A kli cheres is not able to be makabel tuma on its own outside. Maybe that's what saves the ring. So that if you've got a blockage, the blockage being the outside of the kli cheres, which is impervious to tuma, right? So now you're aiming a tuma beam at it. It can't penetrate the kli cheres. But if you aim a tuma beam at a human, it does penetrate the human. So if it penetrates the human, maybe it will actually hit the ring inside the human's tummy and be mitami. What do you say? So you can't really bring a raya from there, right? So tomar ba adam shemitamebi gabo, masha inking the outside of a human is actually not impervious to tuma. It is completely transparent to tuma, I would say. So what makes you think that something that is balua inside of a tummy is not going to be mitame? Mitame. Yeah, but that's irrelevant, says the Gemara. Now, this is a very subtle argument, gentlemen. That is irrelevant, says the Gemara. Why is that irrelevant? Because we're not talking about outside. Don't bring in extraneous, literally, information. The outside is irrelevant. We are talking about the inside, aren't we? We're saying that we're going to learn the din of the inside of an Adam from the inside of a kli cheres, correct? And therefore, what you're doing is you're making it even more imperative, our argument. Because what we're saying is that the same way that Torah things on the inside of a kli cheres, not on the outside. So that makes it even stronger. The kli cheres, actually, in terms of its inside, is more likely to be makabel tuma because it has the incredible situation in which it doesn't even have to touch tuma. Any tuma that enters its airspace inside is metameit. So therefore, the comparison of a tummy to a kli cheres, that's tummy, is actually the kli cheres is much more chomer, because it wouldn't have to touch its inside to be tummy. It could be hanging in the middle of nowhere being tummy. That would not be true of anything else. So it's metame be'aviro, and a person is not going to be mekabel tuma from having a sheretz hanging in the middle of his mouth. Okay. So the Kal Vachomer is a great Kal Vachomer. If the inside of a kli cheres, which is very open to being makabel tuma, nonetheless, it keeps something that was tahor in it from becoming tummy from something outside of it, kol shekein, a person who does prevent something tummy in his tummy, from being metame, kol shekein is going to be mitahir, meaning keeping the thing that was tor, from being mekabel tuma in the first place. And therefore, it's still a good raya. Now, this raya still doesn't make much sense if you look at it in a simplistic way, because the question stands, doesn't it? If something is impervious to allowing tuma to itself, that may be the reason that it prevents the tuma if it's in the kli cheres that has a tzamit pasil, is enough to create a barrier to the tuma. But how does that show that the adam would, where he doesn't have a barrier, how does it show that something which is inside, that the whole question of being inside without any barrier, just insidedness, is enough to keep something tar? You see, that doesn't seem to make all that much sense. Our original question was, maybe the kli cheres is a perfect barrier to tuma because it doesn't allow tuma to get past it, right? It's a chatzitza b'fnei ha-tuma. So if you would take a kli cheres that's not mekabel tuma from its outside, put it in front of a doorway, it's going to prevent the tuma that's in the house from going out of the door because it doesn't allow tuma through. If you put something that does allow tuma through, it doesn't stop tuma from getting through it. Maybe that's the whole point of the tzamit pasul. Are you guys following me? Are we on the same planet? Hello? Naftali, maybe you should just sing us your latest song. It could be the birds will help. Man, oh man. Yeah. How about David Solomon in Rome? How about him? How about Mordechai Schenkler with a tossing a hamburger? And what about our anthropologist from Mars? And even Richie sitting over there having a ball in Finland. Even he can't share for a moment. I'm telling you.
Mordechai Schenkler loves it when Rebbe roasts.
There you go. Now things are coming back alive again. I can feel the juices flowing, Mordechai. All right. Thank you for giving me a jolt of humanity here. Let's hope it lasts for the rest of the daf, because I know what you sneaky guys do. You give me a second, and then gradually things sort of peter out again. So, the beautiful, this is such a lovely and delicate svara, the beautiful point that the Gemara is making, as the Brisker Rav makes clear, and actually it's not the Brisker Rav, it's his father, but as the Reb Chaim Brisker makes clear, is the point is this. The tuma that we're talking about over here is kol asher ba'ohel yitma. Anything that is inside of the space, right, is going to be tame. And it has nothing to do with a barrier if it's inside of the space. So what that means is that what we're describing over here is a different space, which means that the real way that the kli cheres is going to work with its tzamit patil is by creating a balua space that is impervious to the space outside of it, not to the tuma outside of it. And therefore, this is a description of spatial relationships, not barriers, in which case the same thing is true of the tummy of the human. It's because it's a different space where it's inside of him, not outside of him. And we couldn't care less about the barrier. That's not the point. The point is the halal itself. And therefore, if we're learning out one halal from another halal, it's a perfectly valid lima that has nothing to do with there being a barrier. Okay. Now, all of this tells us only where you swallowed something in your mouth. And we know, however, that the din of balua works in both directions. If somebody sticks something up your rear end until it actually is swallowed up and doesn't come out again, that is called tuma balua as well. Now, the problem is that only the pasuk that is referring to eating the nevela That is the mucker of the din of Beluah not being metame. But how do we know that it doesn't matter which direction it got into you from, and that in either event, it's considered to be Beluah? So Ashkechan Beluah de la Mala, Beluah de la Mata Minola. How do we know that the same halacha of Beluah is true even if it goes up your rear instead of going down your mouth? Well, it's a Kal v'chomer, isn't it? I mean, the main digestion is actually the digestion that takes place in the intestines. So if somebody sticks something up your rear, he's putting it in a place that is more likely to be digested. And therefore, if even lamala, where it just gets into your tummy, which is not the main part where things are digested, because it's not absorbed in the tummy, it's absorbed in the intestines. And nonetheless, it's matzil. Kol shekein, if something is stuck up into your intestines through your rectum, it's showing for sure that's where digestion takes place. So it for sure should be beluah. No, wait a minute. You don't digest things in your intestines if it doesn't go through a stomach, for heaven's sakes. You're going to stick a piece of meat up your rear end. It is not going to be digested, let me tell you. And therefore, what are you bringing me a raya that digestion takes place in the intestines? It only takes place in the intestines because it went through the stomach. Kluma ose ikulamata ele yedei mala? Does anything get digested by going directly to an intestines without going through the first part of the digestive tract? No. True, says the Gemara, I never meant to imply that. But since the point over here is digestion per se, digestion takes place in the intestines, not in the stomach, let's face it. And therefore, as far as the place of digestion is, the eco, the mokam of the eco lamata is the more choshev eco. So therefore, it's still a good kal v'chomer. Okay, so this teaches us the din of human swallowing. But how do we know that things that are balua inside of a behema, which the Mishnah, remember, that we had in Eilos, took for granted, that whether something is balua in a human or balua in an animal, it's the same thing. And the only mocker that we had over here for the concept of Tumah V'Tayra balua was actually from the case of an Adam who eats an Avela. But how do we know that that same thing is true, even if of a behema? Well, I mean, it's a Kal v'chomer. A human being is the only living thing that can be Mekabel Tumah. A behema can't be Mekabel Tumah. A behema is only Shayach to Tumah if it's food or if it is dead and it's an Avela. So, I mean, it seems pretty clear. If an Adam who is metame mechayim is nonetheless matzil bebalua, a behema that bechalal is not subject to tumah. So for sure, ain't odin shetatzil bebalua? Yeah, but you can't bring a raya from that because an Adam is actually more kal. Imagine a situation like this. An Adam is wearing his clothes and he walks into a bayit hamenuga. Do the clothes become tummy? No. They only become tummy when he eats in the bayis, as it says in the pasuk, right? So if he eats in the bayis, haboel abayit, so then yitma'ad ha'orev, but ha'ochel babayit, yechabeset begadav. So that means, doesn't mean literally to eat, it means to stay in the bayit a shiur of achila. But if a behema is wearing a blanket, you know, and it walks into a bayit hamenuga, what's the din? The blanket becomes tameh instantly, like anything else that's brought into the bayit hamenuga. So apparently, an Adam is more kal. And maybe since the Adam is more kal, that's why he's matzil bibalua. So mal Adam shekein sarich shihiya the bayit hamenuga. It's so great, the number of different sugyas that we managed to get in every day around here, right? So an Adam, if he waits long enough to eat a shear, which we'll see what that is in a moment, and a bayit hamenuga is matame begadav. But a behema, the minute that the behema walks in with that blanket on its back, it doesn't need shiya bayit hamenuga, and therefore the behema is more chomer. No, please. It's not because the behema is more chomer. This, what are you referring to when you say a behemah doesn't require shehiyah? Behemah ain't a tzricha shehiyah b'bayit ha'menugah. L'mayochot, or case being what? A blanket on its back, right? Whatever it's carrying on its back. If a human being is carrying something on his back, it's exactly the same as an animal. It becomes tameh immediately. The only time it doesn't become tameh immediately is if he's wearing it, because then it's batel to him. But if he would be like the animals don't wear things, they carry things. And therefore, if an Adam was carrying things, even if he was carrying his own clothes, his clothes were immediately tamei. Adam nami lo boy, there's no din of shehiyah. Take a look at the Mishnah. This is like the yisod of the Mishnah in the Goyim. If somebody did not, somebody goes into a house that has tzaras, and he's got his shirt draped over his shoulder, he's not wearing it, and he's carrying his shoes, and he's carrying his rings, and he walks in, they become tamei instantly. If he was wearing his clothes, he was wearing his shoes, he had his rings on his fingers, then only he becomes tamei immediately. But they remain tahar unless he stays long enough in that house to be able to eat an shiur of achilas pras of patritim, which is easy to eat, velo patzorin, and he's eating it while in a matzav of concentrating on his food and making it easy to go down, and a cup full of sugar, megmesev erchel beliftan, he has to be eating it together with that teaspoonful of liftan to allow him to eat it with a good appetite. And that means he's exactly the same. There's machlokas, remember, between Rashi and the Rambam about whether that's four kibetzim or three kibetzim, but we've talked about that before, bisnogeya erevin. And that means that the person is no different than the animal. If the animal could be wearing things, you know, which is not a thing that we apply to animals, but theoretically it would be the same thing. Okay. Actually, we now understand the mukkar for Rabba. Tuba Balua is not mitame outside. Tahira Balua is not mitame inside. But what do I need Rabba to teach me that for? Both of these things are beferish mishnayis. Tuma Balua is a mishnah. Danina. Tahira Balua is a mishnah. Where? Well, Tuma Balua is a beferish mishnah in mikvaot. It says over there, a kohen swallows a ring that is tamei b'tumas meis, and it is cherev hareyu kecholal. He can go to the mikvah, and he can eat his truma, and there's no problem. Hikia, but once he gets rid of it, either from top or bottom, then it is still tamei, because it didn't become tohor by his going to the mikvah and getting hazoya. It just remains tamei, and as it comes out of his body, touches him, and it makes him tamei again. But while it's inside of him, it is not mitamei. So that's a beferish mishnah. Tahira balua is also a beferish mishnah. Where is that? Doc, mute. Your patients are screaming, and it's getting in the way of the daf here. So, yikes. Oh, no. No. Mute. We either mute the patient or mute your mic, one or the other. Okay. All right. So we also have Tahira Balua in another Mishnah, because it's not another Mishnah, the truth is it's the same Mishnah, that it also says that Balata Batahora, if you swallow a ring that was tar and you walk into an oil hames, and then you became tar, by going through Hazoya and mid both Shlishi V'Shvi and Tvila, the ring remains when you get it out of your body exactly the way it was. And it was completely Tahar. And it never became Tameh. And if it would have become Tameh, it would not have become Tahar because you were Matayar yourself. That wouldn't have changed anything. And we see from over there that it's Kamosha Haita, and that means that it was not Mekabel Tuma while it was in your tummy. So what do we need Rabba for? We'll finish in a sec, because this is the point of our Mishnah. Rabba was saying something much more powerful. Rabba was saying that something that is in your tummy is not tummy. Not that it is not mitame. So let's say you, like we say, you're really into these rings. So you swallow the one ring. Oh man, is that tummy. Pure Mordor. And it's completely mitame. And then you swallow Gladriel's ring. Does Gladriel's ring become tummy because of the fact that it touches the one ring? No. But it's both in the same space. Ah, that's the Chiddush of Rabba. Tuma Balua is not metame. It's not just that it doesn't get out. It doesn't have Tuma anymore. That's an incredible Chiddush. And it is essential, as we're going to see, for us to understand in order to properly understand our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah seems to be saying the opposite. If you've got one ring, which is the hand of the midwife, and the tuma, which is the dead uber, it says in the Mishnah the midwife becomes tumea. But that seems to be because they're both in the same tummy, so to speak, right? But we'll talk about that after Shabbos. But kikama rabba, kigon shabala shtei tabaot. One of these rings was tumea, and one of these rings is tahar. Rabba's chiddush is that even in the case where they're both in the same tummy, the tame ring is not mitame, the tahar ring. Which leads us to tomorrow's question, which will leave you, of course, at the edge of your seat. But what about the Mishnah of the Uber and the Chaya?